ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
So we're going to it's a simple Sanskrit verse, so we'll say it a couple of times to get the feel for it. We'll talk about what each word means, the translation, and then we'll read the commentary called the purport given by the founder Acharya, the one who presented this literature. Atacharya sutastesham bhutim ikanta sanstitam alakshabhitas twarito ragna aveda yagyata. Word meanings. Ata, thereupon. Acharya sutaha, the son of Shukracharya. Tesham, of them, the sons of the demons. Buddhim, the intelligence. Ekanta samstitam, fixed in one subject matter. Devotional service. Alakshya, realizing or seeing practically. Bhitaha, being afraid. Twaritaha, as soon as possible. Ragye, unto the king. Hiranyakashipu, Avedayat, submitted. Yata, fittingly. A fine word, fittingly. Okay, translation. When Shunda and Amarka, the sons of Shukracharya, observed that all the students, the sons of the demons, were becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness because of the association of Prahlad Maharaj, they were afraid. They approached the king of the demons and described the situation as it was. Please repeat. When Shunda and Amarka, the sons of Shukracharya, observed that all the students, the sons of the demons, were becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness because of the association of Prahlad Maharaj, they were afraid. They approached the king. They approached the king of the demons and described the situation as it was. Purport. The words Bhudhim Ekanta Samstitam indicate that as an effect of Prahlad Maharaj's preaching, the students who listened to him became fixed in the conclusion that Krishna consciousness is the only object of human life. The fact is that anyone who associates with a pure devotee and follows his instructions becomes fixed in Krishna consciousness and is not disturbed by materialistic consciousness. The teachers particularly observed this in their students, and therefore they were afraid because the whole community of students was gradually becoming Krishna conscious. Today's verse, again, this is a particular situation in which it requires a little bit of context, just a little bit, because we don't have a lot of time. But the fact is that there was an ascetic who gained great power through his practices of mystic yoga. And his intention ultimately was to get more control, to be able to manipulate people. And he became very powerful, because one can do this through the process of austerity and penance and so forth, as Hiranyakashipu is his name, had developed this kind of power. It didn't last for very long. In the context of the whole story, we see the rise and fall of Hiranyakashipu because of the fact that he was materialistically motivated. He couldn't ultimately sustain his power or influence. Just the nature of materially motivated desires, they don't last very long. In any case, one of the main themes of the story is that although he was materialistically inclined to the extreme, he had a son named Prahlad, who was from his very birth a pure soul, and who was not interested in materialistic endeavors. His father, Hiranyakashipu, sent him off to the best schools to get trained in how to become a good exploiter of the world. But Prahlad was impervious to the teachings. Actually, he had already heard from a spiritual master while he was in the womb. And this was, the effect was indelible. So when he came out into the world, it was natural for him to follow the path of devotional service. And despite the fact that his father tried to train him in material science, politics, and so forth, was Prahlad, to the process of devotional service. So this frustrated his father, who was a king. Actually, he had rulership over the universe. And now teachers who had been charged with training him up at the school in the proper way are becoming frustrated. They've brought Prahlad before his father, and apparently he has been indoctrinated into devotional service, and they're not exactly sure how this is happening, because he's isolated in a school where he can only learn about the subjects they're teaching. They haven't seen anybody infiltrating the school. And so they're really dumbfounded about how he became like this. So now, this verse again. When Shanda and Amarka, those are the two teachers, the sons of Shukracharya, observed that all the students, the sons of the demons, were becoming advanced in Krishna consciousness, because of the association of Prahlad Maharaj, they were afraid. They approached the king of the demons and described the situation as it was. So now in the purport, Prabhupada is describing how one can see the effects of association. And this is a primary philosophical and very practical point, actually, at the same time, element of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and of the science of Krishna consciousness. And that is that we become whomever we associate with. We become like whomever we associate with. One of a very general verse about this in the Bhagavad Gita is in the 13th chapter, which is describing various effects of three modes of nature in this world. And there, Krishna says, Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. That if you want to understand how you got to the position you're in right now, then you can look to your previous associations. Whomever you've associated with will develop your character. And our present condition is a composite of the kinds of association that we've had in the past. Karanam guna sangosya. So we've developed, or as the word is used frequently in the Bhagavad Gita, acquired various modes of nature by our association. So this is actually an ontological point, that we are, as living, conscious living beings, in a particular category of energy. Sorry if this is too philosophical, but it's important. There are various categories of energy described broadly in the Vedic scriptures. One such scripture called the Vishnu Purana says, Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Shetra Gyakya Tata Para Avidya Karma Sangyangya Tritya Shakti Ishate. And that is that there are three general categories of energy. One is called the internal energy, or the spiritual energy. This is the most desirable. It's the highest level of energy, and it's in the spiritual world, or that's what the spiritual world is composed of. And then there's an external energy, which is evident in the material world where things get kind of bogged down through entanglement and fruitive activities. And then there's a third energy, which is really a curiosity, which is called the jivatma, the soul, I guess in common parlance, the soul or the jiva, the living force within that we know, that we are. This is described by Krishna, the nature of the living entity. He says, "Mamai vamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana." That is that there's a supreme origin of everything that is personal. He's called the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that from whom everything else emanates. And we're also, and he's eternal. He has all spiritual qualities, and we're a tiny part of that supreme whole. Just as much as a spark is a part of a bigger fire, it has the same quality as the fire, but quantitatively it's minute compared to the fire. Does that make sense? Say yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So now getting to the kind of one of the interesting points about this third energy we're describing. In Sanskrit, there's a term called tata or tatasta, which means that this soul can decide which energy that it resides within. It can be within that internal energy that I described, which is a superior kind of energy, or it can covert with the external or the lower energy of the material world. And in this sense, the soul is really dependent on its association. So one way I like to think about it or describe it is that every living entity is open to suggestion. Because you may notice that living entities do flip on many issues. The first time I noticed it was in high school. A friend of mine, good friend, Stan Wall, he was kind of an oddity because he was very conservative amongst many liberals. I come from California, and he took a hard stand on the Vietnam War, that he was for it, and he thought that we should be there. Of course, many other young people were protesting against the Vietnam War and said we shouldn't be there. And then I saw he listened to a hearing that was broadcast on public radio. It went on for several days. It was about some atrocity that was performed. I can't remember the My Lai incident. And he listened for several days with headphones on to the proceedings and the evidence that was put out against the U.S. soldiers who had committed some atrocities there. And I couldn't believe it. None of my friends could believe it, but Stan Wall became like totally changed within 3 days of listening to these proceedings on the radio, from being a staunch supporter of the war and a conservative to the extreme. He became the most kind of radically liberal advocate of the other. I mean, he flipped. That was a total flip. That's the first flip I ever saw to that degree. But if you look around, you'll find people flip all the time. And there's also a term nowadays, it's called radicalization. And people study this, actually. I've read some studies about the way in which people going around on social media, they get caught up in some light banter, some racist talk or misogynistic, whatever it is. And then they sort of get drawn in, they get more association with people who are radically inclined. And then, it's like, what happened to Louis? He's gone, All his stuff's gone, and he ends up in the newspaper. He's fighting for the Taliban or something like that. Is that Louis? He's in the newspaper. Louis flipped. He became a radical. He's radicalized. And so we can become radicalized by our association. So this is obviously a double-edged sword if you think about it. On one side, you know, we're so vulnerable that if we get into association of extremists or at least association that's undesirable, then I'll pick up those qualities. On the other side, if one can use one's intelligence, as Krishna recommends in the Bhagavad Gita, evam buddhi param buddhva samstab yatmanam atmanah jahi shatrum mahabaho kamarupam durasaram. He said, try to develop your intelligence so that you can see what is good for you. And by making intelligent choices, choose your association wisely. And if you do that, then you'll naturally make advancement in progressive spiritual life. I mean, all progressive life is spiritual. And so when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was once asked, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the primary teacher of Bhakti Yoga, what is the nature of a Vaishnava? How can I tell what a Vaishnava is? He said, Asat Sangha Tyag E Vaishnava Char. He said, a Vaishnava is one who is very careful about his or her association. And Asat Sangha gives up association with those who are not favorably situated on the path of a devotional service, knowing very well that by good association, he or she will also develop good qualities. So this is one of the primary ways in which one can advance in devotional service is by choosing one's association very carefully. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said once that if you associate with people who are wrong-headed when it comes to philosophy, one of the primary ways in which one can be wrong-headed in spiritual life is to speculate and think ultimately on, you know, trying to use the power of one's own brain that God is impersonal and that ultimately I'm God. This is an erroneous conclusion. However, if you associate with people who have come to that erroneous conclusion and who stick to it and want to propagate it, and you listen to them, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said it's dangerous because you can be affected by that. And he said even an advanced person could change his or her decision about performing devotional service and worshiping God because of that kind of association. So that's a primary point in this purport, that if you associate with those who are situated strongly in devotional service, then you'll also develop those kind of qualities. I think I'll make two more points and then we'll have some discussion. Another point here is that the Shanda and Amarka were afraid of the situation. Going back to the context, Shanda and Amarka were employed by the king to train up a lot of kids in materialistic science, and especially the son of the king. And it appeared that they were failing because the king had wanted them to go in a certain way. This happens a lot with kings. You'll notice throughout history, works of art and literature and so forth are commissioned by the king. And oftentimes the artist will amend the story or make the art favorable to the countenance of the king or whatever it is, you know, so that they don't get their head chopped off. That's a problem. When you have a vested interest, in other words, you're getting paid by somebody, you tend to want to sort of shade the truth, or you're afraid to tell the whole truth because of the consequences might be dire if you do. That's why in universities there is a system called tenure in which after you've been there for a certain amount of time, proven yourself, you're supposed to be above the law because you can't be fired. I mean, that used to be true. Nowadays there are some cases. But the point is that you should be able to teach and tell the truth without worrying about your job. And that's the same thing in the Brahminical Vedic culture. People should, the Brahmins, they're not being paid by anybody. They're not dependent on any one person, and therefore they're not worried about telling the truth. We see Shanda and Amarka are worried about their jobs and their, actually maybe their, you know, their lives, because they're failing in their job. So one of the great tricks of life is to not have a vested interest in the world as much as possible. To the degree that I don't have a vested interest in for myself, to that degree I'm free to move about the world and tell the truth. So that's helpful. And we'll take a few reflections to maybe expand the conversation. Go ahead. Or anyone who would like to.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Prabhu.
I was wondering if you can expand on what it means to associate, because sometimes it is seen that maybe in good association don't develop this fixed intelligence. Sometimes it is seen that devotees are in bad association, perhaps at the workplace or whatever it might be, but they remain transcendental, they remain very steady in their awareness. So it seems that association is more than just proximity with good or bad situations. So I was wondering if you can elaborate on what it means to really associate.
That's why I pointed to you, even though you didn't raise your hand. Could count on you to ask a perfect question. So in the Bhagavad Gita, the 13th chapter, there's, you know, a beginning of a thread to answer the question. Krishna says, Anye tvevam ajanataha, shutvanebhya upasate, tepi chattitrantyeva, mrityum shuti parayana. That's the verse. So Krishna there is talking about how one realizes that God's in one's heart. And he describes various ways in which people attain that position. And in the verse I've just quoted, he says there are some people, even though they don't know anything about spiritual life, they're ajanataha, shutvanebhya upasate, because they have a tendency to be open to hearing from others. When they hear from the right authority, from a spiritual authority, then tepi chatitrantiva atitranti, which means they transcend the lower energy of the material world by that process, mrityum shruti parayana, and actually they can transcend death by that process. And what is their quality, and how is it, in answering your question, that they're associating? A shruti parayana, they're good at hearing, and good at hearing means they're open to hearing. They don't have it in their mind that I already know. They have this feeling that I don't know. I'd like to know, and they respect the person and the source that they're hearing from. So this is primary in the process of association. If one can triangulate enough to understand that here's a valid source of knowledge, and even if you're not intelligent but you just happen upon it, you think it's dogma, and you follow the dogma and it's the right dogma, you'll still make advancement in devotional service. There's a sense of that in that verse. And so association really primarily means hearing. It's what you hear. And this is an interesting point, because in the there's a famous verse that was imparted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by his spiritual master Srila Ishvara Puri, evam vrata svapriya nama kirtya jatana rago jita chuta ichar hasatyato rotiti roti gayati unmadavam rititi lokabhaiha, in which his spiritual master was telling him that when one takes a vow to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, gradually the heart will become soft, it will melt, and then one will become absorbed in spiritual feelings. And the verse actually goes on to describe how such a person may not care for the regular conventions of the world, may seem a little out of pace or out of touch with normal social conventions. In the purport, there's something revealing about that in that the acharyas, and several of them comment on this verse, say that that not all advanced souls exhibit external symptoms that you can tell, you know, like from crying or hair standing on end, which are sometimes described as spiritual symptoms that are externally manifested. Some show that and some don't, but Madhvacharya says that all advanced spiritual people show two qualities. These are always present. One of them is they're steady in their practice of devotional service, and the other is what he calls mukya prasada, which means that the vibration that comes from them is transformational, and it's actually merciful. They're speaking not for their own aggrandizement or to exploit others, but because they're full in themselves. When they speak, the sound has a different quality. And this is, much is made of this throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. For instance, Satam Prasangam Mamavirya Sambhido Bhavanti Rit Karna Rasayana Kata Tajjo Shanarashu Apavarga Vartmani Shradaratir Bhaktir Anukramishati. Anukramishati means that if you associate with Satam, or those who are sincere about making advancement in spiritual life, you'll hear the right kind of sound. That's the real association that you get. And poetically, it's described how that sound enters within the holes of the ears, and then it ends up in the bay of the heart. And then it transforms your life. From there, your path is no longer one of hard work in the material world, but now you have your sights set on the spiritual world. And that transformation starts by association, and that association specifically means what you hear from those persons who are sincere about spiritual life. You want to ask another question? Anyone else? Yes, please.
When we first join Krishna consciousness, we become very enthusiastic and taking up a lot of services, responsibilities. And now all of a sudden, some devotees flip back into the material world. What is it that they are doing wrong? Why does that happen?
Well, you have to get a little bottle. And when you have that early enthusiasm, you just put it in a bottle. And then when you need some of that, you open the bottle, take a little drop. Actually, you can get that by seeing people who are again and again coming to Krishna consciousness and noticing that there's something special in Krishna consciousness. One of the reasons we're a missionary movement is because by interacting with people who don't know about Krishna consciousness, it's really surprising how responsive many people are. I mean, people can be responsive in various ways. In the sense that they're not interested, which is interesting also, because why would you not be interested in something you don't know about anyway? And then there's other people that immediately become attracted. And, you know, what is that? We see that, when we see that again and again, and there's new people who come, and it's like, why are you so interested? It reminds us that I should be interested also. There are many reasons, and this is really... it's summarized in the small book, you know, the primer about devotional service called The Nectar of Instruction. Rupa Goswami sort of encapsulated the six items that by degrees will take us away from that natural enthusiasm. And then he emphasized six items that will help us to maintain that enthusiasm in devotional service. And those things can be studied and restudied. There is a phenomena which we see in the Shastra about when we come to Krishna consciousness, and you can sometimes get a free sample. And in Chicago, I remember the candy bar company used to come out with a new candy bar, and they'd give it out on the street in a smaller size. And the people would be lined up for blocks. And then they come back for another one. They said, no, now you have to go buy it. And so Krishna sometimes gives a free sample, and then you know, it's like, give me more free samples. And Krishna's like, okay, now you try a little bit and persevere over time, because there's purification that takes place when we face our own anartas. This is an interesting point, hopefully not a long one, about steadiness, because that's one of the points here. What is steadiness? And that's mentioned actually by the absence of certain kinds of obstacles that may be in our path. There are five listed by the great teacher of bhakti, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, when he says that there are five obstacles between us and having 2 feet on the ground and being steady in devotional service. Just briefly, he lists sleep, the tendency to want to sleep while I'm performing my devotional practice, especially chanting or hearing. And, you know, I can be perfectly awake and then the Bhagavatam starts and what is that? It's an obstacle. And then he mentions distraction. He said that I'm practicing my chanting or devotional service and my mind darts to various other kinds of subjects. So he said, this is an obstacle. And then he says, you're not sleepy and you're not actually falling asleep and you're not being distracted by anything, but you just don't care. That's an obstacle. And then there are innate qualities, like where did that come from? It just comes out of nowhere, you know, some anger or lust or something like that. And then there's a natural tendency of the senses, which is understandable, to be attracted to their objects in the material world. And this he elaborates on to some degree in his book, Madhurya Kadambini. And he says, once you overcome these five obstacles, then you're in steadiness. So it may be that when you take to the practice of devotional service in the beginning, you find a burst of energy and some, excitement. It's very exciting to understand that actually the distance I have to go is not that far compared to the distance I've come. But then there's coming to grips with the fact that I actually have to go through anartha nivritti. I used to be in a business where I'd help other people come into business. And I noticed the phenomena, and that is that people were really excited in the beginning, the prospect of being an entrepreneur. But then after they realized that they had to work at it, make a few phone calls, they'd be like, maybe I'll try another business. And so it's kind of a tendency to balk when it comes to the hard work. But, you know, we needn't be afraid. If we simply go on with the practice of devotional service, then we can gradually come to stand on our own 2 feet. And that's a big accomplishment. And it's one worth struggling with the obstacles to come to. Yes?
Online question.
Our last point, which we'll make within 30 seconds or less.
So this is an online question from Tushar Sinha. He says, one question, Maharaj. How can one get good association if one lives in a place without other Vaishnavas or temples, and one has only access to online resources, methods of contact through Facebook, YouTube, etc.?
Well, I mean, the social media is, of course, a double-edged sword. But if you use it properly, I know people in far-flung places that are taking great advantage of it, whole morning program and so forth. I mean, if that's your connection, you can get a lot out of that and feel really connected. There's also literature that you can take into your home, but definitely increase the hearing process through electronic media, and you'll notice the difference if you stay in touch in that way. And then, I mean, we feel connected to him right now, don't we? Everyone give him a little encouragement. Say Hare Krishna. Can you see everybody? What's his first name?
Tushar.
Tushar, give him a little love. Come on. See, all the devotees here love you. So be encouraged and keep tuning in and keep chanting Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bho Vancha Kalpdurvishcha Kripa Sanabe Vicha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Nantakodi Vaishnavindi Ki Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Hey Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman Natari Armarman